Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We thank Bob Costa and Charlie Cook for filling in during Jim's vacation last week. Jim, it is great to have you back, and hopefully you're tanned and rested and ready to dive into all this stuff.
I'm sunburned and not eager to return, having enjoyed vacation, but I am ready.
The good martini actually stems from a pretty bad story from last week, and that was the Senate passage of its version of the immigration bill. And it comes from Trey Gowdy, South Carolina congressman, who's been very outspoken on this issue, as well as Benghazi, the IRS hearings. If you want good entertainment at some of these congressional hearings, Trey Gowdy's definitely your guy. But he was on Fox News Sunday. So was Chuck Schumer. And so you have Chuck Schumer saying, oh, Republicans need to get behind this bill. I mean, their electoral future's on the line if they can't attract Hispanic votes. And, you know, the Republican voters, they'll get over it within a few months. They don't really have anything to worry about. Here's Schumer trying to make that case on Sunday.
They fear Republican primaries from the right if they vote yes. But I believe over the next several months that dynamic will change.
Trey Gowdy not exactly buying that, though.
Well, John, I was moved almost to the point of tears by Senator Schumer's concern for the future prospects of the Republican Party. But we're going to not take his advice.
And here is why Trey Gowdy can't get behind the Senate bill, among many other reasons.
I can't sell a border security plan where Janet Napolitano gets to tell us the border is secure. I can't sell a border security plan where the executive can turn on and off triggers for politically expedient reasons, nor would I try to sell any of those plans.
And Jim, we'll have to see how the House Republicans are on this issue across the board. But after weeks and really months of the Senate Republicans kind of wringing their hands over this, it's good to have a nice, clear explanation of why this is bad news from the House Republicans.
Yeah. And, you know, we're going to look back at this and maybe wonder why there was so much kind of intense coverage and drama around the Senate vote. Because it was kind of pretty clear it was going to pass, and ended up passing with 68 votes, which is a, you know, pretty healthy margin, you know, almost all the Democrats and probably about half the Republicans. But what's interesting about this is that, look, the House is never going to pass that. We knew the House was never going to pass the Gang of Eight version as is. So the House is going to pass its own version, and its own version is probably going to be a lot more focused on border security and enforcement and may or may not include a path to citizenship at all. Where this really gets decided is in conference. And what's going to be intriguing is whether, when they'll appoint the conferees, whether there is something that can pass both the House and the Senate. And apparently, you know, one of the quiet stories of this has been a bunch of Democrats who are convinced that when this ends up getting, you know, the conference version, in order to get a version through the House, they won't get any of the stuff that they want. Now, as we've discussed before, the entire Democratic philosophy on immigration is, how soon can I get 11 million new voters? I want 11 million new voters. Give me them now, 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 now. That's pretty much their bargaining position. And the Republican position is much more, we want a secure border first, and then maybe we'll think about some sort of path to citizenship to the 11 million. But, oh, by the way, we want to do what we can to pick through that 11 million and figure out which ones are criminals and which ones are not going to be good Americans, and we'll sort them out and deport them and send them back. Until you square that circle, the odds of getting a deal are not as fantastic as a lot of this, oh, it's inevitable, tone of the discussion and the debate has considered. You know, get on the train or before it, you know, runs you over. Look, you still got to get through the House. While there's probably a bunch of House Republicans who'd like to pass it, Boehner has said he's not bringing it up unless it's got a majority of his caucus behind it. And my guess is you'll see a very different version come out of the House, and you'll end up with a very contentious conference committee that may or may not end up with something. They can pass both chambers. So we're really still in the early chapters of this debate, and still a lot of road ahead, still a lot of points where you could end up with having the whole thing just kind of blowing up and no bipartisan compromise version coming out of conference at all.
And Jim, you were just on vacation in South Carolina. In response to what Trey Gowdy said on Twitter, I saw at least one and perhaps others who said, yeah, Trey Gowdy, any interest in running for Senate next year? A lot of people upset with Lindsey Graham since he was involved with the Gang of Eight on the other side of the issue. I'm not sure Trey Gowdy's ready for that, but I know a lot of conservatives would be pretty excited if he did do that.
A good way of putting it. A lot of conservatives are a lot more interested in Senator Trey Gowdy than Congressman Trey Gowdy is himself.
All right, on to martini number two now, Jim, and what we've heard from the Obama administration, ex-Bush administration officials, ever since the Edward Snowden NSA leak story came out, is that this, it was a secretive program, but there are safeguards in place. You know, we joked a couple of weeks ago about President Obama didn't really necessarily know the difference between accountability and transparency, saying there's the Congress oversight, there's the FISA court oversight. So this is taken care of. And so now you've got one of the leading intelligence community lawyers coming out and saying, you know, there's a lot of lies out here about this program and other activity in the intelligence community. It's just unfortunate that the truth's not getting out there. But as the Washington Post points out today, Director Clapper and others are out there deliberately saying things that are untrue in public, which makes it kind of hard for us to really get a clue on what's going on here.
Really fascinating front page story in the Post today. I think one of my favorite sections is when Clapper, the Director of National Intelligence, wrote a letter to the Senate in which he says he had misunderstood the question he has been asked. I remind you that this man's title is intelligence. And he said, I didn't understand the question. I have thought long and hard to recreate what went through my mind at the time, Clapper said in the previously disclosed letter. My response was clearly erroneous, for which I apologize. Greg, you and I know that if you're caught committing perjury, a very remorseful letter of apology gets you off the hook, right?
Every time, yeah.
Every time, yeah. It says something, the Washington Post putting this on the front page to kind of say, hey, you know, when the administration or government officials say, trust us, this program is on the up and up, it's really hard to trust them when it turns out they lied to us. You know, we have no way of independently verifying any of this information. So when they say, don't worry, the whole thing's working fine and it's not being abused, well, when you tell us false information, we really can't take you at your word. Two other great examples they mentioned there are Obama saying that the FISA court is transparent. No. You know, the court's sessions and decisions are sealed from the public. At the end of the year, they give you a summary of how many they approved and how many they rejected. And as we all know, the rejection rate is close to 1%, less than that, actually. Now, to give you a sense, the other argument is, well, look, the whole thing is under congressional oversight. So if you have any worries about this program, don't worry. Congress is coming to save you. Jane Harman, former ranking Democrat of the House Intelligence Committee, I love this quote, says, well, are people deliberately misleading other people? I suppose it can happen. Thank you, Congresswoman Harman, for, you know, it's theoretically possible that people are lying. People whose, you know, whose entire professions are in espionage. And don't worry, folks. Jane Harman is on the case because she thinks it's theoretically possible that, you know, some people might lie. Yeah, that's kind of the issue here, Congresswoman. Now, she's a former congresswoman, so I'm sure that the current House Intelligence Committee is way better than this one. So,
from one mess to another, let's head over to the crazy martini now, and that's the situation in Egypt. To summarize from CNN's coverage of what's been going on there, Egyptians who helped overthrow a 29-year-old dictatorship in a widely hailed revolution have now given the country's first democratically elected president one day to step down from office. These are obviously the people who were part of the Arab Spring movement there back in early 2011. They demanded reforms from Mubarak. He tried to play out the clock, eventually had to step down. Morsi and the Muslim Brotherhood swoop in. They kind of ram through a new constitution without much ability to debate. And still the economy and government corruption are as rampant as ever. And so these same people are saying, hey, you're no better. You might even be worse. And so it's time for you to go. That's the premise here. But Jim, it's fascinating that other than a couple of blips in a story like this, there's hardly any coverage of this. I mean, back when Mubarak was about to be toppled, it was wall-to-wall on the cable news networks. And I don't know if it's because we're headed close to the 4th of July here, but there was very, very little coverage of this, either over the weekend or even in the days leading up to last weekend.
I'm on vacation. I'm visiting my parents who actually just gone on a cruise. And amongst the place they stopped were Alexandria and Cairo. They talked to people there and they'd heard from Egyptians on the ground that the end of the month is when they're going to have a really big protest. They've had it with Morsi. They saw a lot of anti-Morsi graffiti and you know, pictures with this, you know, with his face and a slash through it. Sounds like this place is really going to, you know, boil over at the end of the month. Late Sunday night, we talk about the concept of under-news. If there are some people who are following the news and they get, you know, Paula Deen and the Trayvon Martin trial. Right. And if you follow Twitter, you get a completely different bit of news, including the idea of just these giant protests. I mean, the streets of Cairo were filled. Now, somebody had thrown around the number that 17 million people were at the protests. I have not seen that number been verified. They are saying millions of people. Some people argue this may be one of the largest popular protests in human history. Now, I'm not disputing that this is a complicated story, that it's not a simple narrative of good guys versus bad guys, or even secularists versus Islamists. And I think, you know, I wanted to write up a post criticizing U.S. policy in Egypt, and then I realized that to do so, we'd have to have a policy regarding Egypt, and we just seem to be kind of making it up as we go along and issuing very bland statements calling for calm, kind of like Chip Diller at the end of Animal House. Oh, stay calm, all is well. So last night I'm turning on, okay, MSNBC is going to have the usual lock up San Quentin. And okay, so right, they're not going to do it. Fox News, I didn't check. The CNN, look, CNN, this, you know, this is, as somebody said, this is fire alarm television. When something is blowing up in a foreign land, you go to CNN, right? Anderson Cooper always taking off his shirt, refugees in the background. They had to have somebody there, right? No, they were doing the documentaries on crimes of the century, including the sniper shootings. So last night on CNN, they were giving me really fantastic coverage of what happened in 2003. What was happening at that moment in Egypt is not so clear. And so you're watching and you're watching and you're left scratching your head. Even this morning, there wasn't a huge amount of coverage. And it was really kind of frustrating and disappointing. That, look, I recognize not everybody's going to be gung-ho crazy about foreign news and say, eh, how does it affect me? But look, this really is like a giant foreign news story that is going to have ramifications for us. We did have an American killed who was a student studying over there. It's not quite a news blackout, but you have to look out this news, and this looks like it'd be at least as big a story as the uprising against Mubarak. So I don't know if the news folks didn't feel like working on Sunday night or what the situation was. Hopefully, as the events develop in Egypt and, you know, as the week goes on, there'll be more coverage. I was kind of frustrated this morning to turn on Daily Rundown on MSNBC just went straight to Trayvon Martin coverage. Now, I understand it's an important live coverage of the trial apparently going on all day. So, hey, sorry, Egypt, there's a big trial going on. Come back to us when you have a new government.
Jim, do you think it could be because the revolution that we kind of jumped in front of at the last second didn't turn out quite the way that the administration hoped?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a couple of folks were saying, you know, the administration looks pretty foolish to have, one, tied its fortunes to Morsi to the extent we've done anything in Egyptian policy. And then secondly, as it's been, you know, clearer and clearer, the public is turning against Morsi in large numbers and basically believe that he has not delivered on his promises, and they're getting impatient and he's autocratic and taking control and abusing his power and all that stuff. We haven't done much. And, you know, some of the protesters out there are stomping on pictures of our ambassador out there. So just to, you know, it seems like once again, the administration's been caught flat-footed. And a whole bunch of folks in Egypt are furious at the United States for backing the regime when I think most Americans are just flat out unaware of anything that's going on over there.
Well, and I say this without any intended hint of sarcasm. If there are security requests from our embassy with all this going on, I really hope they're honored.
People had asked Kerry about that, and he offered the traditional John Kerry mush answer. So,
well, he's in charge of our Middle East policy now, so I'm assuming everything's going to be fine within a matter of weeks here.
Yeah, of course.
Jim, welcome back. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Tuesday for the next edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.